And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Join us this Saturday for an all-new episode of The Athletic NBA Show, Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by me, Andrew Schlecht. I'll be joined by my co-hosts Alex Spears and many of the Athletic beat writers that you know and love. We will recap the week of the NBA, play some NBA trivia, and just overall talk about the league that we love most. So while you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee on Saturday morning, listen to Saturday Slammin' Jam on The Athletic NBA Show.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Coming up on today's show, Katie Heindel comes and hangs out. We're going to talk about empathy in this weird season and point guard identity. Yes, Kyle Lowry's up.
This is Nerdish, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to the Friday Athletic NBA Show, and that means it's Nerdish, She Wrote. I'm Dave Dufour. Seth and Mo are here as they are each and every week, and I don't know if people have ever been this pumped for a guest. I also don't normally tell people when we're going to have a guest on. My good friend, Katie Heindel, who you know from Basketball Feelings, the best basketball newsletter, and Dishes and Dimes podcast, is here. Hi, Katie.
Hi. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
We got somebody class up the joint here a little bit. Somebody that brings this level up another notch. It's been hard, Katie, carrying the load for me. It's been tough.
It's been all you, Mo.
It's Dave and three people with credibility. That's really what we're at right now.
It's the new name of the show.
So how is everything? Odd season.
Odd season.
Especially for the Tampa Raptors.
Yeah, that's been pretty strange. I gotta be honest, it's like been a bit of an arm's length season for me, you know, and I think like trying to find things to kind of like lure my way back into basketball with almost. There are flashes here and there, but then, you know, this kind of overarching weirdness of everything always manages to creep back in, which I think the weirdness is more an awareness. That's not such a bad thing, but yeah, we'll get to that.
There's just a certain, like, surreal feeling about every single thing that happens. Mm-hmm. Everything. Mm-hmm. It's just weird in general.
I think we've talked before about this. It's the attempt to present the game in a way that's familiar just exacerbates their weirdness. Like the bubble was just so obviously different that you kind of accepted it. But we're in the uncanny valley with, you know, the in-game activations taking place in an empty arena with everyone wearing face masks. It's just like, this looks like, but not at all. And this is weird.
It's like the going through the motions thing. Yeah, exactly. That I keep getting stuck on. And it's kind of the most disorienting thing because I feel like in a lot of ways the league thinks it needs to go through the motions, but in doing so, they sort of seem like they're several steps behind.
I mean, look, there's financial motivation, mm-hmm. right, for everybody. And, you know, that's the world we live in. And I think as long as we start there and we know that and we understand that, that's why they're back. I honestly believe that if they weren't going to lose money, that they wouldn't be playing right now. I do think that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the players, for sure.
I think that's across all sports. I think that's something that the money is what drives them in that sense, you know, and it's the way it works actually in a lot of these industries. I don't think we'd have restaurant workers, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that they're getting paid, right? Like it's, and they need the money and things like that. The league needs the money and the players need to keep it going and things like that. I mean, it's unfortunate in our society that that's where we're at, but this is what it is. So, I mean, it's not a surprise. And I think we all kind of knew going into this year it was going to be a weird year, right? Like, I'm not out here saying let's toss out everything that happens in this season doesn't count, but we also knew there was going to be just weird all around the whole way through the end. So I don't know what else to say after that. I'm just rolling with it.
But I think even at the end there where you're like, I don't even know what to say. I completely agree. I feel almost the exact same way. And we talked about this a little bit. There's no through line, like the plot of the season. Can anybody tell me what the story is? The story is just that it's weird. Nobody's in the lineup, you know, half the time. We get a big game. And I mean, Utah versus the Clippers, it's the first time that there was no missing marquee player. You know, Utah plays the Jazz. There's no Anthony Davis. This compressed schedule is obviously wreaking havoc on a lot of guys. I mean, there are players that look out of shape 2 months into the season. And part of that might be fatigue. Part of that could just be lack of training and like actual, you know, getting themselves physically ready. Guys also still working themselves into shape. It is an odd year, I think, from that perspective.
Yeah, but you know, the other thing too, though, about like marquee players missing games and things like that, and I know I'm going to sound like an asshole here, but this is something that happens every year. Don't shake your head. Seth's shaking his head in there like he's shocked that I sounded like a prick there for a moment. But, you know, it happens every year. We always have marquee games where somebody misses and things like that and stuff. It's just a little bit different now because it's like, oh, wow, it's COVID protocols. And now we don't know how long this person's going to be out. There's no timetable in that sense. You know, like Drew Holiday, you know, misses a bunch of games and the Bucks falter, right? And it's like, this is the kind of stuff, this is what makes this year so unprecedented. But like, in the sense of really impacting the games, the way I'm looking at it, and again, insensitive Mo here, but this is the way it is, it's just like, it's just injuries to me. It's just like, okay, this is injuries. I'm hoping everybody's going to be fine in the long run, but this is the way the season goes in that sense. The bigger challenge is just not having the practice time.
Mm-hmm. I think like the permeating moment for me, and maybe what is like begrudgingly the through line, and this is why I think it keeps feeling so disrupted, is because the NBA is actively trying to push against it. But like, when you started to see COVID-19 creeping up in like the injury reports, so it's like so-and-so knee, so-and-so groin, and then it's just like, you know, four lines of like COVID-19. And then when that normalized to a degree, and then it's like games are postponed. Okay, the fact that they have like a two-part schedule to begin with, they obviously knew it was going to be a reality. And then I think the disruptive feeling is because obviously the league knows that that's happening, but they don't want to lean on that as being the main storyline. So a lot of these like other storylines that they keep trying to push, or like we keep trying to pick up, is like, whether it's just like fans or media, I just feel like the same kind of heart and like fulfillment is not there, because you keep getting dragged back to the harsher overarching reality.
So on this show, we talk often about coaching, I mean, and the ins and outs, and some of the important parts that are just kind of unseen. Mm-hmm. Empathy is an essential tool for a coach. Emotional intelligence, it's one of the reasons why people thought Steve Nash might actually be very, very good as an NBA head coach right away, because it was the thing he was known for as a player. Now, I'd argue being a great player with high emotional intelligence is different than being a coach that way, right? Like, when you're a player, you're one of the guys. When you're a coach, there has to be a delineation. I think we might see that learning curve over the course of the rest of the season as they get healthy and start to actually turn into a real team. But we talk about this a lot, and it's very easy, especially in this year where you have 10 games a night, so many nights, to just lose sight of the fact that these are human beings who are also going through all this stuff, but also in front of us on television. And I wonder if, when we're saying this season doesn't really count, and it really doesn't, like, let's be honest, I can't compare this to previous seasons. I don't think it's going to do me much good in the future to look back on. You know, very, very little of this, I think, will carry over in any way that's meaningful. And I have to stop myself a lot from losing sight of the fact that it is a weird year, and these guys are in the midst of the weird season. Like, they actually have to play it day in and day out.
I'm surprised we haven't seen more instances like the Draymond Green situation was about a week ago. I'm here with two kids and I feel at the end of my rope quite frequently. And I can only imagine, like, this is a high kind of emotional demand job that these players and coaches have to begin with. And then you're adding this just level of dislocation and external stress on it. And I'm surprised we haven't seen, like, you know, ejections and like, has there been a single like scuffle of note all year? And I'm really surprised that we haven't just seen that kind of people kind of grinding up against each other in that way. And I don't know if that's it, like why that is, but I would have thought we would have seen more just like frustration boiling over kind of moments.
Well, you know, I thought the bubble was actually pretty good about that. Like the intensity was turned up so much, but even there, you had the Porzingis Morris dust up, and I can't really think of any off the top of my head. I also usually just forget about those right after they happen.
Because nothing ever happens. Nothing happens when those things happen. Yeah. It's a lot of nothing. It's a lot of fakeness in that stuff. But to kind of go back to Seth's point, though, I'm actually not surprised. And it's really because it's all about compartmentalization. And I hope to God I said that correctly. It's very hard when I use big words. The idea of it is like, this is something you do the entire time in a regular season. You know, a lot of these guys use this time as getting away from their lives and focusing on that stuff and locking in. So I'm not too surprised, Seth, that we haven't had a lot of that, just because this is for them almost the closest thing to normalcy for them, right? Their job is playing basketball in a normal situation, and this is them doing normal basketball stuff. Does it look different? Absolutely. Does it feel weird? Completely. Your coach is wearing a mask. He has to pull it down to call out a play. It's awkward, you know, and all of that stuff. But there's a little bit level of normalcy, and I think the guys are doing a good job of almost said it good the second time and just failed. But just doing a good job of kind of keeping in their mindset in that sense. There's a lot of other challenges. I think it gets tougher when they're on the road. I think it's when you can't go out and you're stuck in the hotel room and things like that. And then there's also cities where even in the pre-pandemic, you just didn't go out because, you know, what are you going to do in Sacramento? It's those kinds of things. So
it's Mo DeKeel.
Yeah, come at me, Zach. Come at me, Sacramento. Yeah. Come at me.
Yeah.
Come at me. I'm from LA. Anytime, drive on down. Y'all stay here. It won't be good living up there.
I think that's a good point that you're making. And you know, Katie, you write about some of the most interesting stuff, right? You have a way of, I don't know if they find you or you find them, but you find the guys with weird tics or, I mean, look, the Steven Adams worm farm is, I mean, who, Katie, you're the only person that could have written about this.
Yeah, I mean.
But I wonder, go ahead.
I was just going to say, thinking, I was upset when we talked about this earlier and you didn't think it was worth an entire episode.
Yeah, well, okay, sorry, I'm not going to talk about worm farms for 45 minutes, but I do think that worm farm, like, that's a healthy thing. He is finding distractions that are not basketball, and it's just funny that like a worm farm offers him some sort of comfort.
I just want Dave to say worm farm about 100 more times.
Worm farm.
It's ASMR at this point when he says it. I mean, like, that was interesting because he was just like, Steven Adams was just like, all I do is go to practice and then go back to my house. Or if we're on the road, I go to the hotel and then I go to an arena. And he said it was just starting to get to him. So I guess to be able to shift his focus onto something else, worms. But to get into, like, I don't know, he was really in depth into like the soil pH balance and like all that kind of stuff. And to me, it makes sense with a cerebral man like Steven Adams. But I do think, like, just to what Mo and Seth were talking about, like, I do wonder if that kind of, like, these guys are such creatures of habit and they establish like a certain rhythm. And I think they have to be able to compartmentalize and to be able to just like have this sort of fluidity and like get in the zone. So I wonder if in the first half of the season, there was a bit of a relief to kind of be back into the swing of things. And I wouldn't be surprised if you saw this kind of tipping point or maybe more of a boiling over as things continue, because like, it's not that the weirdness will go away, but certain elements of this new routine will sort of smooth out, and there might be fatigue that sets in. There might be a certain amount of just like annoyance at like the protocols dragging on and on, because like they're living in the same world as the rest of us in that sense. Like they see the backdrop. So, I mean, it is, I'm not surprised that things have kind of held together for this long, but I do wonder on sustainability.
Yeah. And the second half of the season is going to be interesting to watch. I mean, it always is anyway, because you start to see the attrition of the schedule mm-hmm. catching up to a lot of teams by then too. Mm-hmm.
I do want to touch on one thing though, because this is my favorite thing about KD is just the feelings, you know, and basketball feelings in that sense. No. But like the thing we haven't even touched too much on is just empathy, right? And that's something that really matters. And it's something that even before pandemic, like we just didn't allow in our guys. Like Joel Embiid got clowned for crying after losing game 7 on a buzzer beater. I mean,
Rudy Gobert caring about the All-Star game and being honored by not only, you know, fans, but coaches around the league and being upset about it. Listen, we can all say we would maybe handle it differently. But I have no idea what that really means to Rudy Gobert. I just have to take him at face value.
No, but it's just like we want these guys to care so much about everything. And then as soon as they show,
until they do.
As soon as they care, we just start ripping them. And it's interesting in that sense of just like the empathy aspect that we kind of as fans and media members to a degree don't allow these guys. We want it, but we don't want to see it. We want you to go.
Well, that's toxic masculinity that like just permeates sports, right? Like,
yeah,
you got to be a tough guy and a cool guy, and you got to be all these things at once. And by the way, I mean women too. Women are guys. You got to be tough. You got to be cool. You got to have ice in your veins at every moment. Better not choke on a free throw when you're tired at the end of a game. I mean, there's a lot of that stuff, right? And it maybe this year we could just kind of go, okay, he's not a choker. It's tough.
There's another part that you're not really mentioning. It's that's like, and if stuff goes bad, you're not allowed to feel bad because that's what the money's for. Mm-hmm. And right. That's, you know, that like, that is the excuse to not like, you know, you might be getting paid, you know, $5, $10, $15 million a year. If your job sucks to go to every day, it still sucks to go to. I mean, maybe like you have some more material comforts and there's like certain worries you don't have of someone who's, you know, working minimum wage, but that's like as a daily existence, especially in a profession like this, where you're so essentialized to being a basketball player. Like think about what that does. It's just like, you know, you know, if all you are is a basketball player and you're playing bad, it's not a big leap from I'm playing bad to I am bad. And I don't know how money makes that okay.
Yes.
Katie, fix it.
But this is where the
Katie, fix it all. Empathy and basketball. Go.
But this is where the best coaches. I mean, look, Greg Popovich and Mo, you talk about this all the time. Greg Popovich knows his players and cares about his players. And I mean, Mo, you've told me stories about Greg Popovich that were personal to you in the video room. And I think when you have leaders like that, you can withstand some of these bumps in the road that you can't. I honestly, you look at what Utah's doing. I think Quinn Snyder is coaching the season of his life, because he's not only got these guys playing so well, but look at that locker room. They seem connected. You know, from the Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell episode last year, where it just seemed like that rift was not going to be solved, to where they're at now.
Well, and that,
and maybe they're just teammates, right?
That rift existed before COVID too. I mean, you and I absolutely saw it in person.
Yeah. Where they were ignoring Rudy pretty much. But they've bridged that gap. And I mean, I think to me, he's the runaway coach of the year just for that, because he got his two best players on the same page. And you know, he's got these guys all pulling one rope, which I know I repeat myself saying that a lot, but it's true. Like, you're not winning a title unless that happens. The Lakers last year were a great example of that. I think this is where, you know, we don't properly rate LeBron's leadership enough and the way that he builds chemistry with guys and the importance of that over the course of a long season.
I think a good, like, microcosm example of this has been with the Warriors and, like, what's kind of happened to the Warriors. Because another thing that sort of fascinates me is, like, the tipping point between empathy and sympathy and where it changes and why. And I think the Warriors, you know, a franchise that was hated for so long for being so dynastic, then, like, fell from grace. And I think there was first sympathy, and people kind of right away, I think, like, boomeranged around and started to feel pretty bad for them, especially given what happened to Klay Thompson and just, like, everything they had to go through. And then, to me, this year, even though my heart broke again when Klay got hurt, but the fact that he's now come back in, like, sideline reporting capacities, and they generally just, like, they seem to be having fun. Like, they're not, there's not that much pressure. The pressure's kind of been alleviated because, like, they're still, I guess, in a little bit of a stasis year. They're not bad. They're not playing badly. You still got Draymond. You still got Steph. Like, Wiggins is playing good, passable basketball. Yeah. And I think there's something to be said for, like, that pressure being off. And they're a little bit out of the spotlight. And now it's easier to feel empathy towards them. Also because of, like, I think Steve Kerr is such, like, a proponent of that. And, like, that sort of teaching.
Right.
Like, that coaching methodology. But yeah, like, they're very interesting to me because I can't think of a team that was, like, as uniquely and severely hated for as long as them, you know, in modern NBA.
Yeah.
And now they've come back and are just, like, I think people are just more excited to, like, see what's next for them.
I mean, it's basketball joy. That's mm-hmm. the thing about the Warriors, right? Like, Steve Kerr talks about it a lot. And it starts at the top, but not just Steve Kerr. Like, they get to watch... They get to watch Steph Curry every night. Mm-hmm. And I think that that helps because, I mean, I watch him and grin, you know, the guy has more fun than almost any other superstar. I think, I mean, you rarely see it look like Steph Curry is stressing in a game, and it's so rare. And I think that everyone feeds off the energy of their leadership there. And yeah, Draymond he's the drill sergeant, and they all have their role to play in that team. You don't have that structure in a lot of places. And it's important for long-term success, especially. You can have a one-off year where you might win something without those things. But if you want a dynasty or if you want sustained success, you need that leadership from the top.
I think, you know, part of it, though, is, you know, just being smart as an organization. I mean, Katie knows it firsthand. When you watch the Toronto Raptors as an organization, just think about all the stuff they did going into the bubble, right? The players walked into their room in the bubble and they had pictures of their family and things set up for them and things like that to kind of just make it home. Just a small, small thing. Like, they knew, they understood it's going to be a difficult time and things like that. It's just having that empathy as an organization and the awareness as an organization to see that stuff and to understand, like, hey, we got to make sure our guys are in a good place, because when they're in a good place mentally, you're going to get good basketball out of them, right? And you need to try to encourage that environment as much as you can. And that's really the hardest challenge, because there's just so many ebb and flows, ups and downs in a season that is challenging. And I think that's something like the Raptors, I think, do a good job as an organization of just kind of taking care of their players, understanding them, seeing them and hearing them and reacting to it.
Is that something you can fake? Because you're putting that in terms of, like, purely instrumental, like, our guys will play better. Or to have that actually be impactful, do you have to actually kind of care first? Because, you know, 30 organizations talk about we're a first-class organization, we do blah, 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 blah. But to really get it right like that, it's not just we're going to do everything first class. It's you have to – what would really make these guys feel good? And that be the first thought. Not how can we get them to feel good so they play well.
Yeah, you can't fake it. It's like a much deeper through line, right? And if it's good and, like, meaningful and I think true, then it's sustainable. And it's more of, like, a feeling throughout, like, sorry to be like, it's a feeling, but it is. It's a feeling, I think, that runs,
yes.
that runs through just like years and years. And like, to me, the Raptors are a good example of this just because like the identity, honestly, until this year, and I think it's just due to some of the like backdrop things that they've had to go through situationally, but like, that's a thing that like players have shuffled and switched. And I think that's one of the huge reasons why Kawhi could come in and be as effective as he was, because like Lowry and DeMar DeRozan built that franchise up into what it was, is like kind of iconic. There's a deep understanding of like what it means to play on that team. Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, Chris Boucher, guys that have like come up through the developmental system, flow so seamlessly into it. And so I think like on the empathy side of things, it goes as far as like what's happening on the court, obviously. But if there isn't that kind of level of care off the court, I think, you know, like Seth, to your point, it is kind of fake and it doesn't really last. And you see situations like what's happening in like with the Timberwolves, or like what's happening with organizations that just change and churn year after year.
Yeah, you know, the support staffs are kind of unsung. You see with the stuff that Phoenix did for their guys when they were in the bubble with the starting lineup intros. You can't fake that at all. And I think that, you know, the good organizations are doing a great job. And I hate to keep to even say the word, but like having good culture does matter for any organization. You know, I mean, the Athletic has pretty good culture and it makes it a good place to work. I enjoy it. And we just, you know, we survived a pandemic, at least without sports. We're not out of the pandemic yet, but a lot of companies weren't able to pull off what the Athletic did. And I give them a lot of credit for that. And this is just my experience. It's the first company I've ever worked for in a pandemic. And I hope I never work for another company during a pandemic again. But this stuff actually does matter to people, because, you know, you're not going to be your best unless you have support, especially at the highest level.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
So you guys brought up the Raptors, and of course, and Katie, please make sure that Raptors fans direct all their hate to Mo. But we have to talk about the elephant in the room with the Raptors. What is their record right now without Kyle Lowry this season?
I mean, it's not ideal.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good without Kyle Lowry. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily a good problem to have. It's great that you've got a team that can lose its best player and you don't miss a beat. But at a certain point, it feels like they're kind of straddling a fence here.
I mean, I'll tell you how I've been approaching this. And it's sort of two ways. It's that, one, the fact that he can be out and for the team to play like it has is a testament to Kyle Lowry as a leader in the way that he has kind of made it his job to make sure that all those guys take pointers and tips and like have learned from him in such like a, I think like a full capacity that he cannot be there and they'll still function the way that they should. I also think there's something to be said for the fact that like whatever the next iteration of the Raptors is, I don't know that it can start until Kyle Lowry isn't there anymore, if that makes sense, because it will always be his team. But my heart says, because I don't want to lose this guy, is that if you take Lowry away, and I understand the argument of like, well, they were really good without him. Like, why do they even need him now? It's because Lowry is the Raptors' only, like, he'll be the closest to someone like a LeBron James they ever have in that, like, he's still capable of, like, throwing the team on his back and winning a game, especially if it comes down to, like, a very long and exhausting playoff series. He's the only one that's able to do that, to just kind of turn things around. And I think there's a reason they were playing so well through that stretch, is because I think he's still extremely involved, whether he's watching tape and reviewing it with guys and telling them what he saw. He's never getting out of their heads. So if you lose him to another team, you also lose that kind of storied, like, friend, like, knowledge of the franchise. I think they're almost there to be at a point where they can continue without him, but it wouldn't look the way it does now, even if he's not on the floor, if that makes sense.
It's almost, yeah. the feelings kind of getting in the way the important basketball decisions. And that's something franchises have to wrestle with. But you make such a great point in the sense of, they can't move on to the next iteration of the Raptors until Kyle Lowry's gone, until they're able to close that chapter of the book. And it's going to have a happy ending. They've won a championship. They were in the playoffs last year despite losing Kawhi Leonard and showing that it wasn't a fluke, that this is really a good team and they have a lot of talent. So it's interesting kind of moving on, but it's going to be challenging for the organization in terms of how they go about it. You know, in terms of if they move on from Kyle Lowry and make a trade this summer, or excuse me, at the deadline, or if they wait till the summer and let him walk for free, it's going to be challenging for them because they're losing such a key part of their history of who they are.
Well, and Seth, you know, that's the PR battle, right? You have to wrestle with the PR part of it and the basketball part of it. Do they get better, potentially, if they move Kyle Lowry and try to fill some of the gaps they have, or they get younger assets looking forward for their younger core, or should they just hang on to Kyle Lowry, bring him back, try to keep doing the same thing?
This is kind of a challenge because it's easy to look and say, oh, well, they're 6-1 without Kyle Lowry this year, and okay, is that. You know, you get the whole causation thing. Is that because, or did him being out kind of coincide with Pascal Siakam playing better? Like, Pascal Siakam was a mess for whatever reason to start the year, and that has normalized to some extent, and so that's a big part of why they're playing better as well. So that's, you know, you have to, from a basketball standpoint, identify what you would be losing if you traded him, and then also like navigate, as Mo was saying, like navigate the sort of the historical and emotive and cultural aspect of what trading him might look like. And that's, you know, that's why this is hard, is those things aren't, no matter how you do the analysis or how well you do the analysis of each of those individual things, they aren't in the same units. So you can't just like weigh and like, well, that's the answer. It's easy. And it's a challenge. It's hard to say what they should do almost, because it's like what we should do is wholly dependent on what the goal is. And like the goal this year, the goal 3 years from now, the goal 7 years from now. Those in and of themselves are interesting discussions, and I'm probably talking myself in circles here, but it's complicated.
Right. I think that you do have an identity issue here for the team. As long as Kyle Lowry is there, Katie, and this is your point that I stole from you. Okay. We were texting about this and I'm just trying to set you up.
I mean, the fans know the identity of that team. Go ahead.
Yeah. The identity of the team, but the identity of the team is fully Kyle Lowry, which gets into a whole nother ball game, because part of the, like, handing the keys to the team to someone else means you're taking it away from Kyle Lowry. Mm-hmm. So how do you do that if he's in house? Mm-hmm. I don't know how you do that, Katie.
I mean, the way that they've set it up now is like, I think Fred's almost there. I think like he...
Well, he stole the keys. He stole the keys. He took the car and he's like literally jumping the Grand Canyon right mm-hmm. now. And that's the disconnect here.
But I think to like fully eclipse, right? Like to fully kind of take on the identity. The interesting thing, and what makes Lowry such like a phenomenal point guard and leader of the team is that he is such an individualized player in terms of his personality, the cerebral way that he plays basketball, that you can picture him on any number of other teams right now that could use him and he would fit in seamlessly. But I think that's to a larger point of like any amazing point guard. I think of like Damian Lillard. I think of Chris Paul. Like they have that weird, like they're kind of freaks, right? They are just like their own version of like perfect freaks. They are like, so they all are concerned with like different kinds of details to different levels, kind of neurotic, but they also have the ability to, because they have to be successful, completely absorb the team that they're playing on. So the catch 22 is like Lowry will land on his feet anywhere. If he gets traded anywhere to like the like plethora of teams that could use him, he will be fine. He will play through it. He will take on that team like a sponge and make them better. But the Raptors will still have a Lowry size hole because I don't think Fred VanVleet is quite there yet in terms of like what his identity as that kind of role, as a point guard, as a team leader will be. But maybe he doesn't get there until Lowry leaves, which is perhaps the bittersweet thing because he can't fully step into that spot with Lowry still taking it, like taking up all the space.
No, I mean, that's the most important point is we don't know what kind of leader Fred VanVleet's going to be mm-hmm. until he has the job to lead. Right now, it's still taking cues from Kyle Lowry and things like that. And then, Dave, when you were saying earlier that it's really kind of the PR side of whether trading him, there's a whole aspect of it, like we talked about last week, beyond the box score, you know, having Lowry set the culture, having Lowry as your leader. It actually takes pressure off of Nick Nurse, you know, as a coach, and he's able to focus more on the basketball stuff because he doesn't have to worry about setting the culture or leadership or things like that. You know, it's a different element. So when they do move on from Lowry, whenever that may be, it's an adjustment period, and it might not be all just Fred VanVleet. Everybody's going to have to adjust down to all the players, down to the coaches. Nick Nurse is going to have to pick it up a little bit. His staff is going to have to change a little bit how they operate and how they approach guys. It's a whole learning process when you lose a guy that's been as institutional as Kyle Lowry has to the Raptors.
Well, he's like Tim Duncan for them, a guy that, you know, you worked with and know well. And I think that, you know, he has a lot of the same qualities. If your best player is willing to, you know, dive after loose ball, and I know this sounds cliche, but diving after loose balls, even if it's not a good play, it sends a message. He screens for everyone. He tries to draw charges. And even though I hate him, it does signify something, right? Your best player is willing to get his hands dirty at any time. He is not too good to sweat. And I think that stuff matters so much, and it doesn't grow on trees. You mentioned the point guard freaks like Damian Lillard. Damian Lillard's of the same vein, you know, Chris Paul. I mean, and it's, I don't know if you're born with it or if you learn it, but if you have it, you have it. And if you don't, you don't, and you can't fake it.
It's as much about, it's a survivorship bias thing. I mean, you know, if you're 6'10 and athletic, you can have, you know, any kind of personality and get there just because there's relatively few to compete with. If you're 6-0 and you're going to be the best player on a team, that's, you are rising to the very highest 99.9999th percentile of achievers. And to get there, yes, there's talent, but there's also just like the mental whatever. And that's, I think, what we're sort of indexing on when we're talking about, you know, the kind of the little general point guard, like whether it's Kyle Lowry or Chris Paul or Damian Lillard, is anyone who reaches that status is going to have something like that because they had to.
Yeah. I mean, trading a franchise icon seems like a lose-lose situation for the franchise. I mean, even Russell Westbrook getting traded when he did from Oklahoma City, I still think Oklahoma City fans, they seem resigned to the fact that it was just, this is how the NBA works. But I know a lot of them that aren't as passionate about the team because fans want to root for more than just laundry, ultimately. Like, they want to feel a connection to these guys. And Kyle Lowry is ubiquitous with the Toronto Raptors. Like, I mean, he is that team. And I don't envy that position for the team itself, because, you know, your job is to build a good team and look out for the team in the future. And, but you also have to, you know, you have fans and you have to cater to them to a certain degree because you want them to like you. It's weird. What does a Kyle Lowry trade even look like? You know, when I think about Kyle Lowry in potential trades, you know, I look at Philly and I'm like, what do they have? What do they have that Toronto would want? I mean, Maxey, I guess, you know, you get a young point guard with some potential.
Hold on, you gotta have a lot more than that. Katie, what do you want for Kyle Lowry? You're a Raptors fan.
That's a better one. You've thought about this way more than me.
No, Dave, you just went on a whole rail. it was an easy thing. Katie, what do you want for Kyle Lowry?
I think about it in like denial, in that I think, it's like, it's an uneven year. Like there isn't, I'm kind of resigned to the fact that like, yeah, I get the team. He's your best player. You can't let him walk for nothing. But I also think to do right by someone like that, who has been so institutional, you want to send him where he wants to go to a degree. But like this year, if you're just being cold hearted and business about it, Miami, the Clippers, Philly, there's no one on those teams that right now would benefit Toronto.
All right. Yeah.
It's a hard.
All the good teams don't have the assets, right?
Mm-hmm. It's just hard to build a trade right now for them. Mm-hmm. You know, like when I think about it in that sense, you know, I look at it going like, I just don't know what the trade would look like, you know, for Kyle Lowry to send him to a contender, to a team that he can immediately impact, where you go, as soon as he goes, they're like, all right, that's it. He's on the Clippers. They're going to be on their way, you know, Raptors West, you know, on their way to the finals. And I think you have that whole kind of scenario. I just don't know how they get there, you know, and how they pull that off and how complicated of a trade it will get to become. But are you ready to let it go? Like, is this, let's just ask this question, because we're getting feelings and things. This is, you got me into my feelings in this whole podcast. Are you ready to, is this time to say, all right, let's, you know, it's time to move on? Like, what's the feel in that sense?
It's difficult because I think so much of the Raptors' future identity was tied up in the Giannis sweepstakes, and like those did not go the way that I guess they had anticipated them going. They're in a little bit of a locationary purgatory right now. Mm-hmm. You know, like that is kind of messing with things. And it's in every year, even last year when it was like, yeah, Kawhi left, but it was still clear to me kind of like what the plan was and like what the future identity of the team looked like, what they were working toward. This is the first season I can remember where I do not have a sense of what that is. And I think it's just because they haven't actually come down on like a hard decision. I think they're still kind of trying to wait. Like, can Siakam become a little bit less like spotty in everything that he does? Fred is like making a jump, but is it going to sustain? What's going to happen with Chris Boucher? Is OG Anunoby going to like sustain through the season? And I think a lot of those questions sort of have to be if they can't be answered, then, you know, Masai Ujiri needs to make a decision, kind of just like a firm, hardline decision on it, because Lowry's value is only going to go up, I think, like after the season, like whether or not he stays or not. But like, I just, no, I mean, short answer, no, I don't want to see him go because I would like for it to be worthwhile when he does.
I mean, again, the contenders just don't, they don't have a way to really make it happen. And if he gets traded, that's where I Philly, obviously he works and probably makes them better and maybe even gets them into a finals. But I don't know how they make that work in a way that you have to pull in multiple teams. It's going to get complicated. But as we wrap up, we always like to look ahead. And Katie, what are you looking at in the next couple weeks? Because I know All-Star is coming up. And I know you're pumped about a dunk contest under normal circumstances and probably not going to allow yourself to, you know, feel anything about this one. But All-Star is coming up and then the second half of the season.
Yeah, I'm pretty mad. I hate, it's just like a travesty to me to like relegate the dunk contest to halftime.
Halftime?
So I don't know. I mean, I'm not in on All-Star this year. I think it's a dumb decision. I understand why they're doing it, but I don't know that I will be watching even the dunk contest. That said, I am working on kind of a series coming up to basically the year anniversary of the league being suspended because of the pandemic. And a part of that, it's going to be probably a 3-part series. Some of it has to do with like the psychological fallout of like turning to Zoom for Scrum, like started in the bubble. What did that mean for players, especially around the social justice movements that were happening in the summer? Just like a super weird way to talk to players and try to feel empathy and try and feel like any sense of connectivity. Part of that too is like, is there an uptick in injuries this season? Has there been an uptick in soft tissue injuries? Does that have to do with the truncated offseason? Is that real? Is this an anomaly? Talk to a bunch of doctors, talk to a bunch of ex-team doctors, sports medicine people, exoskeleton doctors, which was very fun. So yeah, like that'll be up on Dime probably in a week and a half's time. So you could look for that. But I will be kind of looking at that more largely to just be like, where are we from that part of last season? Where is the league? Have they kind of done a 180? And how do we feel about it?
Yeah. Seth, what do you got coming up?
So next Thursday and Friday, myself along with Michael Lopez, who's head of analytics for the NFL, Allison Lucan, who's a wonderful writer about the Columbus Blue Jackets, one of the really the best in any sport, really, of telling a story, combining kind of sports-specific knowledge and numerical analysis, and Megan Chayka, who is the CEO of Stathletes, which is a hockey data company, are putting on a little mini conference called the Sports Ideas Symposium, where we're really trying to get back to some of the roots of some of the earliest sports analytics conferences and really bring discussion that can help people who are newer in the field or interested in the field learn more about you know, how it works, what some of the opportunities are. And you can, the website for that is sports-ideas.com. And it's next Thursday and Friday. We've got some great keynote speakers, including Evan Wash from the NBA. And, you know, join us on Zoom there.
So much
Zoom. Mo, what do you have going on? I've seen this pro photo floating around.
This is a great photo, actually. That was me at
a. It's a great photo.
It was me at a wedding. I looked great, if I may say so myself. By the time this airs, I did a webinar for VO. God, I don't know how to say things. I did a webinar for them on the importance of film and how coaches can use film in development in strategizing for games and things like that. It's called Recording the Hardwood. You can find it on my Twitter feed. Just go check it out. It's for free, and it's what everybody wants. More of Mo.
Okay. I'll let the audience decide if that's what they want more of.
I already know. Katie, I've decided. They know. Yeah. They want more of me. It's okay. Right.
Katie, I'm so glad we got to do this. It's overdue, and I'm sure we will be able to do it again.
Thanks so much, guys.
Dave, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, yeah.
And nobody cares.
Rest. Rest. Listen, guys.
No empathy for Dave.
I'm looking. No, please don't. Listen, I'm babysitting a puppy this weekend.
That's not going to make people feel bad for you.
No. I've been getting tons of like puppy love for the last like day. So that's kind of cool. No, I honestly, I'm looking forward to rest. I want to take the All-Star break and just decompress from the first half of the season and almost throw it out the window completely and start fresh after the All-Star break with just about everything. I'm going to have to put new eyes on every single team as more guys start to become available. I mean, hopefully Jaren Jackson Jr. is coming back soon. So that makes Memphis, you know, like they've got some decisions to make there. That's on my mind. So there's a lot going on. But for the next week, man, I'm thinking about 2 or 3 weeks from
now. He's thinking about sleep. Yeah. No big deal. Like.
I am. I'm going to sleep so hard. Katie, yeah, seriously, this was awesome. I'm so glad you got to make it. For Katie, for Seth and Mo, I'm Dave. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Nerder She Wrote.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.